mission. But now... So money can simply solve all your problems? You get rich enough and you'll instantly shoot to Class 3? Zack probed with interest. Jowl hesitated again, seemingly unsure whether he should answer. I don't believe that this is some secret information of your faction. I can probably buy an information packet anywhere explaining this in detail, Zack said. Well, I guess you're right. I doubt I can get in any more trouble than I already am, Jowl sighed. I wouldn't be so sure about that, Zack thought. Zack wasn't about to say that he not only wanted to steal the shard, but also destroy the ship's engines, if possible. In fact, he had been consciously vague about what he wanted to do, just in case there was some built-in warning system in everyone's head that woke up if he mentioned stuff like blowing up the engine or stealing the cargo. There was no telling what safeguards the ship had against its employees. Jowl was pretty forthcoming, but Zack had already noticed that the technocrat had tried to hide vital information to trip Zack up multiple times. There was no way he'd warn him that there were certain things he couldn't say without sending an alert to the captain. So, what's stopping you from shooting up to Class 3? Zack asked. Well, first of all, I don't have the money for such an upgrade. But secondly, my soul isn't strong enough, Jowl explained. I would need to drastically strengthen it to be able to support that level of power. I honestly doubt I'll ever get there, unless Little Bean suddenly strikes it rich with a lucky encounter. Zack was about to say that it was a bit unscientific for a technocrat to believe in souls, but he stopped himself after realizing that really wasn't the case. He only needed to look inward to see irrefutable proof that the soul existed. Ignoring that in favor of some sort of atheistic, technology-centered worldview was akin to burying one's head in the sand by this point. You're a soul cultivator? Zack instead asked with interest, some alarm bells going off in his head after his recent encounters. Not as the people following Heaven's Path would see it, Jowl said after some hesitation. Did you board our ship without even basic knowledge of our capabilities? Zack only glared in response, making Jowl shrink back again. Well, I think you people call us the Machine God faction, and I guess that is accurate. Our cultivation is essentially slowly upgrading our body parts one by one. For example, my eyes have been improved, along with most of my organs. I no longer require food, but I rather run on energy cells. You're turning yourself into robots? Zack asked with shock. Is it any different with you? Your body is a biomechanical machine controlled by electrical impulses from your brain and nervous system. We are simply upgrading the machine we were born with to become stronger and more durable. The captain is completely augmented by this point, for example, Jowl said, some jealousy evident in his eyes. So he's immortal? Zack asked with surprise. If you can call a robot that. Robots and transhumans are different things, Jowl said with a shake of his head. Transhumans have souls. Robots do not. The captain is not immortal since his soul will continue to age until his lifespan runs out. True consciousness is the foundation of life, and it is not something that can be created out of thin air, at least not until the machine god awakens. At that point, we'll all be able to digitize our souls and reach immortality. So that's what you're fighting for? Zack asked curiously. The vision was reminiscent of how some people on Earth wanted to download their minds into computers and live forever. Some had even believed that the technology for something like that would be invented within their lifetime, if the integration hadn't taken place, that is. It looked like the reality wasn't quite so simple, as the Machine God faction had been working toward that goal for billions of years. Well, the big shots are, I guess, Jowl said. Most of us are just trying to live our lives. So what's the point of upgrading your soul if you're a machine? You said your soul is too weak to become Class 3, Zack said. As we upgrade our bodies, our components become increasingly complex, while the materials become more and more exotic. But more importantly, the components are infused with the deeper truths of the universe, what you call the Tao. The soul is the core of a being, and it is connected to every component. The stronger a module is, the larger the demands are on your soul. If your mind is not strong enough, you won't be able to control it. Worst case, the components will put such a strain on your mind that your soul breaks, Jowl explained. Zack felt that it was an interesting alternative to traditional cultivation. They somehow directly infused their bodies with the Tao, rather than learning it, and used their souls as some sort of spiritual battery. It seemed like a mortal would be better off as a technocrat than cultivating the normal path, by the sound of it. The only cultivation that mattered was that of the soul, and anyone could do that, even himself with his zero aptitudes. So you still need to cultivate using soul-strengthening manuals to progress? Zack snorted. Isn't that a bit ironic? Soul-strengthening was there long before the system, so it's not really a part of heaven's path. Besides, our methods are more refined, Jowl said. More refined how? Zack asked urgently, almost moving over to search the technocrat again for soul-strengthening secrets. Fixing his soul was a top priority, and he wasn't above abusing whatever means the technocrats had. He didn't have the ingrained distrust or even hatred of the Tao of technology, like many of the old forces of the multiverse. He'd use any tool that he could get to protect himself and the people around him. If the technocrat had some bioengineered elixir to give his soul a power-up, he'd drink it in a heartbeat. We train through the neural network. Our company gives access to a decent algorithm, and as a comms officer, I can use the facilities 20 hours a week, Jowl said with some pride. It turned out that all the technocrats were connected to a virtual universe through their implants, but it wasn't actually virtual, as one's soul entered the network as an avatar. It was perhaps more apt to call it a synthetic spiritual world, where distances were irrelevant as it existed in another plane of reality. It honestly sounded like something that should have been created by a great mentalist faction, but it was constructed by the technocrats. It was the piece of technology that defined the Sixth Era, and it was still considered one of the five greatest inventions among the technocrat factions. It only went to show how important the soul was for them. It was the whole base of their identity, whereas their body was just a transient and exchangeable coil. Inside this world were training facilities where one could slowly strengthen their souls with the help of some sort of advanced algorithms. There were both public facilities where one could train in return for an hourly fee, but the result in such places were pretty average. Most corporations had their own soul-strengthening algorithms, and getting access to those kinds of facilities were one of the means to attract talent to their force. Even more conveniently, it turned out that technocrats could access the network while sleeping, so they could work on their souls at night without disturbing their daily routines. Stronger people could even allocate a part of their minds to constantly train inside the network while going about their day. Zack couldn't help but feel a bit jealous at the convenience of the neural network. It was accessible from almost anywhere within their domains, and it was even possible to reach it from much of integrated space. How convenient would it be if he could gain access to such a place? Can anyone enter? Zack asked. Of course, Jowl said, but Zack felt like his robotic eyes were a bit teasing. You just need to implant a neural device or be given access by one of the other two factions. That will mark you as a member of the Boundless Path, though, and you wouldn't be able to live peacefully among cultivators. Zack wryly smiled and discarded the thought. He had enough problems on his hands, and there was no need to make the whole multiverse his enemy just to get access to those training facilities, especially when his own soul-strengthening manual was probably equivalent to some of the best training algorithms. "Wait, what are these boundless and heavens paths you keep mentioning?" Zack suddenly asked. "Is it the same as orthodox and unorthodox forces?" He remembered seeing the boundless path being mentioned during the quest to take out the technocrat incursion, but he had never heard much about it since then. People in his sector only divided factions in orthodox and unorthodox, as far as he could tell. "It's related, but also different. I feel that you cultivators don't really understand our factions because they bunch us together with a bunch of lunatics," Jowl said. "How so?" "We're not some heretics trying to tear the world apart. We just want to live free from the control of an insane AI run amok. What good has the so-called system brought to the world? Endless strife and suffering? And for what? Nurturing soldiers for a war that is long over?" Jowl said with conviction in his eyes. "Yet we're being hunted from all directions because we threaten the interest of the powerful factions who rely on the system to stay in control." "Do you really think that the universe would be so much better off if you managed to destroy the system?" Zack snorted, though what the technocrat said did somewhat resonate with him. "At least we would be free," Jowl muttered. "You still haven't explained the difference," Zack reminded him. "The system is a guidance system, but it's also a limitation, a prison. The boundless faction are those who don't want to bow down to a false heaven," Jowl said. "The factions who follow the path of technology are part of the boundless faction, but so are many cultivators. Some of the cultivators are sinners who try to take shortcuts through nefarious means, but there are also righteous factions." "Why would normal cultivators choose to cultivate outside the system?" Zack said skeptically. "It seems to create a lot of problems for oneself for no gain." "Because the path of technology wasn't the only path that got cut off when Emperor Limitless began his mad experiment. Some paths are missing, others are broken," Jowl said. "How do you know all this?" Zack asked. "No offense, but you kinda seem like a nobody." The comms officer glared at Zack before he quickly remembered where he was and deflated again. "Everyone knows. The origin of our factions and our goals is something that everyone learns in school," Jowl said. "Besides, my teacher told us that the stronger you cultivators are, the more likely you are to belong to the boundless faction. The pinnacle warriors and emperors can see the truth of the false heavens and join the boundless path to continue their journey." Zack obviously wouldn't believe something Jowl had been told by some wartime propaganda teacher, but perhaps there was some truth to it. Why would people decide to go against the system? Were there some problems that arose at the higher grades that forced people away from the conventional path? But then again, did it matter? He had never heard of anything like that in his sector, so even if it was true, then it was some problem that was far, far away from him. He had barely taken the first step of cultivation, and he wasn't much better than some random hillbilly. "Where do you get the components, then? Just buy them at a market? Or do you make them yourself?" Zack asked. "You need to contract a manufacturer, or work for a company that has manufacturing lines. It's another thing that separates good corporations from upstarts," Jowl said. "Almost all my components are acquired at a discount through my employer." "So companies are essentially like sects?" Zack asked. "They both provide body upgrades and soul-strengthening manuals." "I guess you could say that," Jowl slowly nodded. "Corporations have a database of components that provide high synergy with each other. So the best is to move up the ranks within the company to get access to matching parts of the same series. There is a high risk of compatibility issues arising if you mix and match at random.
Chapter 40. Dr. Fried.
It sounded to Zack like corporations had something very similar to the heritages of the traditional factions. But instead of cultivation manuals and instructions on what classes and titles to get, the technocrat corporations instead had manufacturing blueprints and lists of components that worked well together.
"Is everyone in your company equally strong if you have the same components, then? Sounds like a weakness for a force," Zack said skeptically.
"Well, some parts are custom-made to fit with our soul frequency, and compatibility with standard components differs between people," Jowl explained. "So there will always be some differences. Most importantly, even if our components are the same, our talent and souls are not."
"Does it matter where you buy the components from, as long as the compatibility is high? Isn't it the same, no matter where you go, if all technology is old?"
"I'm sure two swords crafted by two different blacksmiths are not the same. One might have better materials, or benefits from a secret crafting technique. It's the same with us. There are billions of Class 1 materials out there, meaning there is an almost endless number of combinations of body parts to choose from. A good component might perform a few percent better than a similar one from a competitor, and certain components might have a synergy that improves performance even further. These incremental advantages really stack up when you consider the number of components a single transhuman carries. Elite Class 1 transhumans from peak forces can easily annihilate a mid-Class 2 transhuman with shoddy components," Jowl said.
Zack nodded in understanding, and he felt it a bit humorous how similar things between technocrats and cultivators were, even though they were of completely opposing philosophies. The situation was exactly the same as the one he found himself in. He had gained one incremental advantage after another with the help of his titles and second class, and these small advantages had stacked up into something immense by now. There was no comparing himself with an average cultivator like the weaker demon warriors. He would be able to take them out by the hundreds, if not thousands, by now. The system played favorites, and the average cultivator was nothing but fertilizer for the elite few.
"So, you can't change jobs if you want to keep upgrading?" Zack asked. "Because of component synergy."
"There are often some rules where we can still contract our old employer for a set amount of years after changing jobs, but most choose to do a large overhaul of components to reform their core if they change forces. This will incur a huge cost, but it will allow them to incrementally improve by swapping out components one by one again, with the help of their new employer," Jowl said. "Real elites are even given welcome packages of full component sets upon getting headhunted."
The two kept talking as they waited for the doctor to return to his office, and Zack quickly got a pretty decent understanding of the technocrats, or at least the machine god faction that Jowl belonged to. And just as he had expected, they weren't better or worse than any other people he had encountered before. They simply represented a different worldview compared to the factions working within the system's rules, but it was also clear that they weren't any better than the ruthless factions that could slaughter each other for a little bit of wealth. The struggle for resources was extremely intense, and there were huge societal differences between the classes. The lower classes worked themselves to the bone to be able to upgrade to higher classes and provide a better future for their progeny, or just to prolong their lives with the technologies that emulated the effects of race upgrades. Meanwhile, the massive corporations and families kept almost all of the wealth and technology to themselves, almost making themselves into gods among men. Zack himself wasn't very convinced by Jowl's worldview, Personally, he felt the system was like the weather. You couldn't control it, and it sometimes screwed you over, but it was part of life. It certainly had a hand in a lot of the struggle across the multiverse, but things might become even more chaotic if it disappeared. Zack wasn't just interrogating Jowl to make conversation and distract himself from the whispers of the splinter, but it was also to understand the technology he had back home. He had gotten his hands on whole production lines and massive fabricators, so he had hoped he'd be able to produce massive weapons that would be able to blow the Great Redeemer to Kingdom Come if he showed up. But it appeared that there were multiple issues with his plan. Not only would such powerful weapons be powered by his soul, but he would also need the blueprints for that kind of weaponry. There was also the issue of his fabrication machines. The ones he owned were no doubt Class 1 fabricators, and would therefore be unable to manufacture higher class items. Finally, there was the issue of retaliation. Small infractions didn't seem to bother the system, but if you went too big relying on technology, you'd land in a heap of trouble, just like the Little Bean did by launching orbital strikes. He also wanted to know as much as possible of how cultivation worked among technocrats to better be able to help and protect his sister. With Jeeves in her head, she could be considered a technocrat, and it looked like he would have to somehow come up with a soul-strengthening manual for her. Normal components put a strain on a technocrat's soul, and he could only imagine that miraculous technology like Jeeves would be even more demanding. He even tried making Jowl download the soul-strengthening algorithm he used, but it seemed as though there were heavy restrictions to stop any such theft. Zack also wasn't comfortable letting Kenzie onto the neural network because of the risk of being exposed. At least, he hoped she hadn't found her way onto the network yet. The system was blocking Earth from the multiverse, and he could only pray that it also included the network. Unfortunately, it looked like the doctor was quite tied up somewhere, and over an hour passed without anyone entering the lab. The long bout of inactivity, along with the raving splinter, started to take its toll, and Zack eventually had no choice but to stab his two shoulders and resume his experiments. A fountain of blood erupted in all directions as a bronze flash burst out through his arm and decimated some machinery nearby, leaving Jowl gobsmacked at the other side of the room. "What's taking so long?" Zack panted, as his murky eyes, filled with killing intent, were trained on the comms officer. Jowl stammered after he saw the outwardly unhinged actions of Zack.
"I don't know. If it's all right with you, I can access our network to see if anything has happened."
Zack thought for a moment before he walked over next to the comms officer as he dragged out the bleeding daggers from his shoulders.
"Do it. No funny business," Zack reminded him.
Jowl hurriedly nodded as a screen appeared in front of him. A series of screens and rows of text appeared in rapid succession, and Zack had no way to understand what was going on. Was this what it felt like for his grandfather when Zack had set up his computer back before he passed?
"Something odd has happened," Jowl eventually said. "There are over 10 incident reports due to mutations, causing problems all over the ship. There are usually some things that need fixing since we acquired the cargo, but not to this degree."
"The shard has become more active?" Zack asked with a frown.
"It seems like it," Jowl said before he shot a hesitant look at Zack. "It seems to have started shortly after you boarded the ship."
"So you don't think the doctor will be coming back here? He's busy putting out fires?" Zack asked.
"I don't think so. He has never helped with repairs before. I think Dr. Fried is more interested in taking readings of the shard than helping the Little Bean. But that also means he probably will come back here to go over the results sooner or later," Jowl ventured.
Luckily, they didn't have to wait too much longer, as the doors suddenly opened, and Zack sat poised to strike. However, instead of a person, a small ball flew inside, and alarm bells went off in Zack's mind. He pushed forward to rush out of the laboratory, but his eyes widened in alarm as Loamwalker refused to activate. Only then did he realize that he was in outer space, whereas the skill needed to be connected to the Earth to work. The ball detonated in a massive shockwave the next moment, and Zack found himself thrown into a wall as he was almost blinded by a piercing light. His ears were ringing and he was completely blinded, but his eyes weren't the only way for him to see what was going on. Dozens of fractal trees rose from the metallic ground inside the lab and the area outside the next moment, and Zack was once again inside a forest. The augmented vision from Hatchetman's spirit showed that a dozen robots were waiting outside, seemingly controlled by two technocrats standing behind them with an array of screens in front of them. There was also a somber-looking transhuman wearing a white robe spectating from behind, and Zack easily recognized Dr. Fried from a picture Jowl had shown him. His conventional vision was just a blur from the grenade, but he still navigated himself outside as a storm of leaves spread out around him.
"It's an intruder!" one of the two guards exclaimed with shock.
Had they just thought they were dealing with some corporate espionage or some curious crew member who wanted to take a gander at the doctor's research? Zack felt he had caught a lucky break as he shot out a rapid series of fractal blades. The blades managed to destroy half the machines, but the remaining ones unleashed an unrelenting barrage of attacks. Both the technocrats were unscathed as well, as dense shields had blocked the two strikes he had launched at them. Zack dodged most of the attacks even though he was blind, but he found out that the projectiles automatically detonated into a kinetic storm that contained some mysterious energy that almost completely ignored the leaves of nature's barrier and caused painful wounds across his body. But to a warrior who had an effective endurance of over 2,000, the lacerations could barely be considered a wound at all, and Varun lit up with a sanguine glow as Zack appeared right between the two controllers. A wide arc of death ended with the two technocrats falling into puddles of blood and what looked like mercury, but Zack had already moved on to his real target. Zack grabbed the throat of the old researcher before he had a chance to react at all. He looked pretty much like a normal human in his 30s, except for his skin being silver. Was this the mark of higher-tier components? The mechanical parts of Jowl were easily discernible, but Zack could barely tell that the throat he was gripping wasn't actually skin.
"I am working for Deramex Dynamics," Dr. Fried said with a calm voice as he looked into the eyes of Zack. "You should know the price we've paid for retrieving this item. I do not know which force you belong to, but we will respond in kind if this mission goes awry. My private emergency vessel is untraceable and anchored at the end of that corridor. It requires no authorization to use. Leave now, and this will be the end of it."
"The undead Empire would welcome your company's attempts at revenge. I am sure some lich would find your weird bodies an excellent source for experiments."
Zack smiled, ignoring the offer. Blaming the undead Empire for his actions had become almost instinct by now. Someday karma might come knocking, but for now they made an excellent boogeyman to blame all evil on. It was less convincing when he was in his human form, but the undead probably had a bunch of living lackeys that got things done for them in the life-attuned territories. The doctor only snorted in response, and Zack's eyes widened when the man's head disintegrated into nothing as a massive blast was released from the torso of the researcher. There was no warning at all, and Zack was flung into a wall with a searing pain in his chest. However, he managed to activate one of the defensive charges of the robes hidden beneath his sci-fi getup at the last moment, which absorbed over half of the damage. The surprise attack wasn't the real issue, though. It was the fact that the doctor seemingly had blown his own head up. How would he use the man's special authorization to get to the shard if he was dead?
Behind you!
Jowl suddenly shouted, and Zack looked back only to see a floating head fleeing in the distance. A cannonball ripped through the air and knocked the head into a wall less than a second after the shout, and Zack flashed over and picked up the seemingly unconscious Dr. Fried. There was no stream of energy entering his body, at least, which indicated that the technocrat was alive. In fact, he hadn't even gotten any energy for killing the two controllers, and Zack was starting to suspect that he needed to destroy the souls of the warriors of the machine god faction, or at least destroy some sort of core component. Zack looked down at the head in satisfaction as he jogged back toward Jowl. He had barely needed to use any energy to capture his target, which would allow him to go all out against the defenses surrounding the shard. The machine god faction didn't have key cards, but this was the second best thing. Now that he knew that the head could teleport, he was also infusing it with the fragment of the coffin to keep it in place, which hopefully would work with technocrat tech as well. As for whether the doctor was actually unconscious or acting, he didn't care. Unless the man had planted a bomb inside his head, he was likely not a threat any longer. It was fine by him if he wanted to play dead, as long as he managed to get past the massive security doors and their accompanying shields that were currently blocking his path. Jowl had moved out from the lab sometime during the battle, and he was currently looking at the destruction around him with dismay. Zack felt a bit bad about the fate waiting for the guy, but he suddenly had a thought.
"Do you use Nexus coins?" Zack asked.
"No, but we can trade them for bits for a small fee," Jowl mumbled with a hollow voice. Zack nodded and transferred 100 million Nexus coins to the comms officer. Jowl's eyes widened in shock, probably because 100 million Nexus coins was more than he'd make in a decade, perhaps a lifetime, at his current post.
"You no longer need to stay undercover on this ship,"
Zack smiled as he said this with a voice that carried far and wide, which quickly changed Jowl's face from excitement into horror.
"Thank you for your assistance. I wouldn't have come this far without you. There is a ship down that corridor, according to the doctor. I suggest you take it before reinforcements arrive."
With that, Zack flashed away with Dr. Fried's head in his grip. Jowl looked at the receding back of his captor with mute incomprehension for a few seconds, before his eyes turned to the two unmoving controllers on the ground. Indecision gnawed at him, but only for so long. He rushed inside the lab, and he quickly put everything valuable and untraceable into his subspace container. He would need every resource he could get if he had to flee to a lawless zone where Deramex Dynamics wouldn't be able to find him. Chapter 41. Desolation. Zack's large donation was compensation for pushing Jowl's fate off course, but it wasn't completely born from benevolence. Such a huge sum would draw massive suspicion toward the comms officer, and his end would no doubt be pretty horrible if he stayed on the ship. But the same probably held even if Zack hadn't done it. The guy seemed pretty shell-shocked, and Zack was afraid he didn't understand the severity of the situation. This way, he'd forced the guy into action to save his skin. It was both an apology and a threat. Jowl could take that money and escape, taking the knowledge of Zack with him. Of course, the easiest solution would have been to kill Jowl, but it wouldn't sit right with him. Zack's actions of reciprocity with Thelem, the Ent back on the sixth floor, had opened his eyes to an important truth. Giving back, or severing karma, wasn't only vital for karmic cultivators, but everyone. If he had cut down Jowl after having received help with the heist and all that valuable information, it would have festered like an untreated wound in the back of his head, so he could only rely on this little ploy to deal with him instead. The money was a huge sum to most people in the F grade, but it was almost nothing to Zack, especially after looting the mentalist. Just one of her dresses was probably worth 5 times that amount, and there were over 12 of them. He was already rushing toward the containment center, but Zack was observing the young technocrat through Hatchet Man's spirit. He saw Jowl run inside and snatch some things from the laboratory before fleeing toward the escape vessel as fast as his legs could carry him. Zack nodded in satisfaction as he ran to the metallic gates guarding the room housing the shard, and he breathed out in relief when they soundlessly slid open without prompting. He was thankful he hadn't gone full muscle brain, as he had initially considered, as he saw the doors were over 2 meters thick with 3 layers of hidden energy shields within. There was no way he would have been able to cut through such an arrangement in short order. The interior chamber was massive, with a ceiling height of well over 100 meters. It was inside the core of the ship, the monstrous spherical construction that had given the ship its name. The cubic chamber that housed the shard just took up a part of it, though, even with its impressive size. It was a good reminder that the ship was like a flying city, and he wondered if completely crippling it had ever been on the table for an F-grade warrior like himself. Roughly 15 technocrats were standing inside the room, and they looked up with shock at the intrusion. None of them seemed like a threat, so Zack rather focused on the giant ball with a diameter of 100 meters in the middle. It was the outer shielding that protected the ship from the shard, and dozens of tubes as large as a man ran along the floor from the right, likely powering the thing up. Zack could barely discern another, far smaller shield inside the ball, but further within there was just a radiant light, like they had captured a miniature sun. He couldn't actually see the shard of creation, but he was sure it was within the core. This was somewhat proven by the fact that the splinter in his mind was fully raging by this point, pushing the miasmic cage to its limits. He was considering how he could use the doctor's head to pass by the defenses when an alarm suddenly started blaring out from hidden speakers, and dozens of robotic sentries rose from the ground. The seemingly empty containment chamber had turned into a battlefield in an instant. The technocrats didn't seem to be combatants, though, as they fled for their lives through a smaller exit in the back. Zack didn't stop their escape, as they were essentially civilians, and he had given up subterfuge by now. Bad turned to worse as a pang of danger in his mind prompted him to quickly discard the head, just in time before it exploded in a concentrated gush of purple plasma that effortlessly melted the reinforced ground where it landed. Zack couldn't believe the professor would up and kill himself. But Zack's brows rose when a cylindric box inside the inner layer released some steam and opened up, at which point Dr. Fried stepped outside completely unscathed. Soul transfer? Or a backup body? The technocrats were full of weird means. "Thank you for carrying me the last stretch," the doctor snorted as a series of clanking sounds echoed out from within his body. "Good thing I kept a few spares in case something happened with the treasure." Zack wanted to retort something clever, but he couldn't come up with anything before he was bombarded with attacks from the robotic guards that had repositioned themselves to protect the power supply of the shield. It seemed the sentries had only held back due to the presence of Dr. Fried's head, but now they weren't restricted any longer. Zack furiously charged the closest machine as he released nature's barrier along with Hatchet Man's spirit to turn the surroundings into his domain. He knew his time was limited, as the captain could appear at any moment. He needed to break through the shield in front of him, but the machines kept blasting him with concussive projectiles that threw him off balance. It wasn't enough to hurt him, as the leaves still absorbed most of the damage, but it did slow him down considerably. 3 furious swings with Varun's bite crushed the thick shield protecting the robot, and another one cleaved it in two. He tried launching a few fractal blades at the shield next, but they were actually shot down in midair by the remaining sentries. Zack grunted in annoyance and glanced at the machines, but he didn't have time to figure out his next step before his danger sense went off again. He quickly flashed away with Loamwalker, and it was just in time as a substantial explosion erupted where he had just stood, making him realize the machines were triggered to blow up the moment they were out of commission.
"It's useless," the voice of Dr. Fried drifted over, and Zack's eyes widened when he looked over.
A massive machine had appeared seemingly out of nowhere, looking like a mix of a walking crystal ball and a mecha. It had 8 sturdy spider legs that held a platform in the air. On top of it, a 10-meter crystal ball rested, and it resembled the containment shields a bit. Finally, there was a platform on top that the doctor himself stood on. Over 100 thin arms reached down from the upper dais, and appendages ending with small satellites pointed at the crystal ball from every direction. It looked to Zack like they were used to restrain the ball in the middle, and he could understand why. A chaotic swirl of febrile energies rushed around inside the crystal, and Zack started to wonder if the crazy researcher had turned the shard of creation into a weapon. Zack launched a series of fractal blades at the outer shield as he spread the storm of leaves to block any attempts at shooting them down. However, the fractal blades ineffectually hit the shield, only creating small ripples, even though they were infused with the fragment of the axe.
"I told you," Dr. Fried laughed. "As long as the sentries are standing, you won't be able to destroy this shield, and the captain will be here long before then."
Zack growled in annoyance when he saw the researcher sitting on top of the weird machine with a smug grin plastered across his face, and he launched another series of fractal blades at the shield, but it was completely useless, like the last time. He quickly realized that his current strategy wouldn't work. The bots were too durable, and they focused on slowing him down rather than taking him out. He quickly forced a storm of cosmic energy toward the fractal on the right side of his chest, and soon after, the first axe of deforestation appeared above him. The bots were just too annoying, and he would rather fell them in one big swing. His arm swelled as he swung Varun's bite in a wide arc toward the group of sentries that protected the massive array of tubing. The machines had proven a tough target for Chop, but against the axe of felling, they were little more than pieces of lumber, and they fell apart and exploded in an instant.
"You fool!"
Dr. Fried cackled when he saw Zack launch his massive strike.
"Did you really think that the shield was reliant on exposed power lines? Who would design such a shoddy defense? You cultivators are really not much better than animals."
Zack only snorted in response, but he was honestly a bit surprised that it didn't seem to have any effect at all. He had still managed to destroy most of the robots, and he was sure that the massive tubes at least provided some power to the shields. Perhaps it was only running on some auxiliary power right now, and the doctor was only putting up a brave face. Besides, it wasn't like Zack was all out of options. Veins popped out all over his arm as he forced even more energy into the skill fractal, and the flaming axe appeared next, causing the very air around it to twist and combust. Zack didn't waste a second as he launched it straight at the shield, empowering the strike even further with the fragment of the axe. The cutting flames of Infernal Axe slammed into the containment field with the force of a tidal wave, and flames were pushed in all directions, incinerating everything around them. Dozens of expensive-looking machines were reduced to scorched pieces of scrap, and even large sections of the floor were turned into molten pools. But the shield endured. Some cracks had appeared across its surface, but they were quickly mended. Zack tisked in annoyance when he saw that the containment held. He hadn't expected that the outer shield could withstand the second strike, even after losing its main power supply.
"You're decent enough for a cultivator, But how can you match up to my lovingly crafted isolation sphere? It can even restrain the shard, so what can a fiddling little huh? The doctor ranted, but was interrupted as a pulse suddenly spread from within the core containment. Zack couldn't believe his eyes when he saw the molten plasma around him turn to mud, and trees and mushrooms appeared out of nowhere inside the huge room, causing the shield to flicker a few times before it died out. Zack and the researcher mutely stared at each other for a second, both obviously shocked by the turn of events. Was the shard helping him? It seemed as though the shard had destroyed the backups, while Zack took out the outer power source. The question was whether this was a random act of creation, or whether the shard was sentient and had some plan of its own. But Zack couldn't focus on that right now, as the air twisted and turned, as Dr. Fried seemed ready to launch his final attack with the weird machine. But Zack had one more card up his sleeve, and he endured the pain as he pushed almost a third of his cosmic energy into the fractal of deforestation, initiating the third and final swing. His bones creaked and groaned as he pushed his arm forward, but he wasn't the same person as when he'd attempted the swing in his battle with Salvation. A terrifying axe appeared in the air, and even Zack felt some palpitations in his heart after sensing the aura. It was an ashy gray, single-bladed axe with a long edge that almost formed an inverted S. The pole and shoulder of the axe seemed to form a robed being whose four arms ran along the cheek of the axe head. The shaft was straight and unadorned, ending at a spiked knob, showing none of the craftsmanship of the intricate axe head. But the most striking aspect of the axe wasn't its incongruous design, but rather the desolate aura that spread out around it. A tremendous resistance pushed against him as Zack almost finished the swing, but he roared and struggled to complete the motion with everything he had. He felt a sharp pain in his forearm as accumulated wounds from past levels reopened, but he didn't care. Zack could have activated Hatchet Man's Fury to effortlessly finish the swing, but he didn't dare to be under the influence of that skill at the moment. The scientist had noticeably quieted down, as he no doubt understood the power of the attack Zack had brought forth, but he didn't flinch as he frantically tapped at a console in front of him. It looked like the rampant surges of power inside the crystal were being magnified, but they were still being contained.
"Die!"
the researcher screeched as dozens of the machine's appendages rapidly reshuffled to no longer envelop the ball, but rather expose the side facing Zack. The sphere started to destabilize, and a second later, the crystal cracked as a terrifying surge of destruction rippled toward him. Zack's mind screamed of danger, but he was unwilling to back down, as canceling his strike now would not only cause a backlash, but also put it on a long cooldown. It was also unclear whether nature's punishment would even work in a place like this, as there was no nature to draw from. His destructive capabilities were, in other words, quite limited, and his other class wouldn't be any help in breaching the core containment field either. He could only meet fire with fire and bet the house on his ultimate strike. Zack roared in defiance as he finalized the swing, even though his arm was strained beyond its limits. A gray wave silently swept forward as the sinister axe of desolation matched the swing, and the whole ship shuddered as the two monstrous attacks collided. Chapter 42. Creation. The whole room violently shook as the wave of ash collided with the vibrant beam. There were no explosions, though, and the collision of the attacks was very different from anything Zack had witnessed before, and it led Zack to believe that Dr. Fried really had managed to harness at least a small part of the Shard of Creation. The energies that had been contained inside the crystal ball contained the ability of inception,
and weird items kept popping up one after another, each stealing a bit of the momentum from his attack. A massive blue icicle appeared from nowhere and shot toward Zack, but it crumbled into drifting ash from the wave of desolation before it even had time to pick up any momentum. There were rocks, waterfalls, and scorching flames that appeared to hinder the wave of desolation and strike at Zack, like all the elements of the world had combined to take him down. However, the third swing of deforestation was the pinnacle of Zack's power, and it wasn't enough to just throw some rubble in front of it. The gray cloud was noticeably diminished as it pushed through the construct's attack, but it still had almost half of its energy remaining when it finally exhausted the beam and swallowed the odd machine along with the doctor on top of it. There was still no explosion, and the mecha only shuddered before falling apart. It was as though the thing was a burnt-out log that turned into a pile of ash when prodded. The doctor's face was frozen in a visage of fear and incomprehension as it crumbled as well. Zack knew the man was finally dead, body and soul as well, as he felt the surge of energy entering his body. A quick look around, unfortunately, indicated that the doctor wasn't the level guardian, as no teleportation array had appeared upon his death. The largest threat was dealt with, but Zack didn't rest, as only half his objective was completed. He flashed forward, running past the pile of dust that was once the doctor and his battle platform. He wanted to stay in the wake of his own attack, though he kept a healthy distance, as he didn't want to turn into another dust pile. The wave had lost even more energy from killing Dr. Fried, but it was a large-scale attack capable of taking out tens of thousands of people, so it continued forward in the limited space of the inner containment field. It finally reached the core that housed the shard itself, another spherical shield with a diameter of no more than 10 meters. A tremendous shockwave suddenly threw Zack back across half the room, but his eyes lit up when he saw what was going on. The last burst of power inside the Axe of Desolation had managed to crack open the final shield, and radiant tendrils reached out from the breach. They looked like condensed sunlight, but almost moved around like the tentacles of an octopus as they gingerly felt around outside the containment shield. It looked just like when the splinter in his mind was searching for cracks or weaknesses inside the miasmic cage, and Zack knew his opportunity had presented itself. He flashed forward with Loamwalker as far as he could until he left the spiritual forest of Hatchetman's spirit, at which point he started to run normally. He needed to snatch the item before the shield healed.
"Halt!"
A tremendous roar suddenly echoed from behind, and the power in the voice alone was enough for Zack to stumble as bloody gashes appeared all over his body. Zack knew this was the end run, and he scrambled to his feet and kept going, ignoring the mounting sense of doom from his danger sense. However, it quickly became too much, and he glanced back and spotted an infuriated metallic humanoid approaching. The cyborg's speed was way faster than his own, and it was upon Zack in an instant. Terrifying energies surged around him, and Zack desperately activated a Bodhi-infused nature's barrier to protect himself. However, a flashing light almost blinded Zack, and he felt a stabbing pain in his mind as all the leaves were shredded to pieces in an instant. They didn't even impede the technocrat for a second as he reached for Zack's throat. Zack swung his axe with all he had at the incoming hand, but Varun's bite didn't even leave a mark as it was blocked by a thin energy layer covering the hand. Conversely, the hand released some sort of counter, and Zack felt the spirit tool yowl in pain from the clash. Zack already understood who this was, and he wasn't surprised that his attack didn't work. This was the captain, a true D-grade hegemon. Even if he was the lowest rung among D-grade warriors, there was no contesting him while still in F-grade. But the clash had fulfilled its purpose, and Zack was shot backward like a comet from the counterforce, straight into the core containment area. Zack prepared himself to swap classes, if needed, to block another strike, but he realized the man had stopped some distance away with a sinister smile. A small pang of pain suddenly flared up in the back of Zack's head as he hit something within the light, and Zack immediately felt an odd force invade his body. He realized that he had accidentally hit the shard, and he quickly tried to reach for his tower token to teleport out as planned. However, he only had time to see the technocrat captain shouting a bunch of orders before the world turned white. A crackling sound full of ebullience echoed out into the void, each snap exuding the primordial Tao. For untold ages, the spark of creation left its mark on the universe, its conceptions growing ever larger and more intricate. But suddenly, its revelry was encroached upon. His breath was the Tao, and his hand was the earth, and when he moved, the heavens shied away. He gripped the spark and clenched with enough force to tear the fabric of reality to shreds. The shock wave shattered the dimensional core that the spark had turned into its nourishment, the explosion destroying innumerable planets. Unwillingness, desperation, desire. The spark shattered, its remnants fleeing to all corners of the myriad planes. Creation was never over. A great sage sat upon his platform with a kindly smile, and with a wave of his arm he brought forth his miracles. Magical scenes covered the night sky, scenes of unfettered creativity and depth. The crowd was busy gaining inspiration from the apparitions above, and no one heard the despondent wails from the captives below as their very souls were being used as fertilizer for the sage's false gifts. The warrior's arm quickly grew and formed a massive scythe as he swung it in a wide arc that decimated the closest attackers. His eyes were already hollow, and his face a sallow mask, but there was no going back now. He released a bestial roar as he rushed into the thick of the Verith tribe's truth slayers, and a shockwave of metal and flesh exploded out from him like a detonation of a taboo treasure. Wings containing boundless force stretched out for hundreds of meters in each direction, like two canopies shrouding the earth. Each flap of the gargantuan bird's wings brought forth storms that ravaged the plains below as it traversed its prison. It hated its inability to soar higher, and it released a cry of desolation. A shudder pushed the clouds away as the wings grew yet longer. Blood seeped out from its body and fell like rain, but it didn't care as it soared ever higher toward the stars above. The young monk desperately prayed for tranquility as he climbed the lonely peak. He couldn't stay at the monastery any longer. He couldn't risk the lives of his brothers. But the whispers never ended even after reciting the mantras. It would be so easy to give in to desire, to grasp the power that resided within. One thought to turn dreams into reality. One wish to challenge fate itself. Zack had once again found himself captive within a storm of visions, showing an unceasing number of fates. Most were pretty horrible, and any lingering notion that the shard was the good to the splinters bad was finally gone. Those who had found themselves in possession of a shard mostly seemed to be just as wretched, just with a different flavor. Coming in contact with concepts that were too far beyond comprehension was to play with fire. You were bound to get burned sooner or later. The flashing visions suddenly stopped, and he found himself looking at a solitary figure from above. However, this time there wasn't a Draugr lady calmly sitting within a lake of miasma in silent contemplation. Instead, there was a cultivator perched on a terrifyingly tall peak under a shimmering night sky. He wasn't Draugr, or any other undead race for that matter, but rather a humanoid alien with ashen gray skin. The alien almost looked human, with extremely fine features, making it hard to discern its gender. It did, however, have four eyes, one normal set, and another one placed almost to the side of his head. The cultivator probably had 360-degree vision, thanks to this feature. The warrior radiated a dense and powerful aura full of verve, and even if Zack couldn't put his finger on it, he somehow felt like the cultivator was the exact opposite of the Draugr lady. The whole peak was drowned in a vibrant shimmer, as northern lights in all colors imaginable danced around him. It was a beautiful spectacle, but the cultivator didn't seem to care, as his or her eyes were closed in meditation. "Hmm?" the cultivator mumbled, and judging by the cadence of the voice, he was no doubt a man. The alien looked up from the ground, and his two sets of eyes seemed to focus on the spot where Zack's spirit hovered. Zack's emotions surged in anticipation as he tried to speak, but he was simply a blob of consciousness without any opportunity to communicate. But it really looked like the system had prepared another fortuitous encounter after all.
Bezi mentioned meeting a child following her path just this way, and now you arrive at my doorstep just moments later, the man said with a spurious smile. I wonder what the villainous heavens has planned this time.
The elation Zack felt was slowly doused as he listened to the seated cultivator. Even though the expressions on this man's face were more amicable than the cold visage of the Draugr, he still felt less welcoming.
Creation and oblivion, broken peaks and an ocean of despair. The cycle continues, the cultivator muttered before he smiled again. Will you break it, or will you drown as well?
Zack didn't understand what the hell the odd cultivator was speaking about, but he was more worried about whether he would provide assistance or not. He felt fine at the moment, but he knew that a storm was probably brewing inside his body back at the ship. A storm that would have no problem crushing him, body and soul, if not dealt with properly.
The villainous heavens brought you to me. But why should I bow to the bindings of fate?
The alien continued, his four eyes gaining a ruthless gleam. Zack's danger sense was quiet, but his instincts still screamed of danger as the lights surrounding the peak started to flash with increased intensity. Zack suddenly sensed his soul being crushed by immense pressure, like he was being thrown into a black hole. But a sudden shudder from beneath the mountain froze the northern lights, and the pressure disappeared in an instant.
Hmm?
The man said as he looked down at the ground again.
Very well. Let the threads of fate run their course. I hope you will survive long enough to provide my wife and me with some entertainment. The eons are growing tedious, after all.
The man pointed a finger at Zack, and his surroundings rapidly closed in and disappeared. Zack realized that the man had sent him away, and he was a bit disappointed over the fact that the four-eyed master still refused to help out, even though he obviously had a connection with the Draugr lady. Had the path the system laid out for him gone awry due to the cultivator's reluctance to assist? And if so, what did that mean for him and his odds of survival? Frantic thoughts swirled in Zack's mind as his vision turned black. But the voice of the cultivator drifted into his ears just before his vision disappeared completely.
Creation is a miracle, but it is also a drug. It will satisfy your desires until you are nothing but a ball of cravings, a husk of a man. But through temperance and austerity, creation will bow to your will.
Chapter 43. Perception of Reality.
2 days remaining,
Agros muttered as he looked out the window of the small farmstead.
I guess it's about time. What's that, darling?
The lithe woman purred in Agros's ear.
I need to go out for a bit, the demon said with a smile as he pinched the bare bottom of his little savior.
You shouldn't walk around too much with those wounds of yours, she said with some admonishment in her eyes. You were on death's bed just 3 weeks ago.
Didn't I prove just how healthy I was yesterday?
Agros said with a cheeky grin, and received a roll of the eyes in return. He had been pretty confident in defeating the fifth-floor guardian after his experience with the Transcendent Master, but the fight had pushed him way harder than expected. The enraged beast had been a perfect counter to him as well, too stupid to be tricked. Things didn't really turn for the better in the following three levels as he looked for an inheritance to end his run with. His wounds kept accumulating until he almost died at the hands of the assassin who guarded the gates to the 49th level. If it weren't for the defensive treasure he had commandeered from Galau, he might have actually met his end then and there. Thankfully, he'd managed to escape from the assassin's pursuit, and he'd quickly disappeared into one of the neighboring kingdoms. However, the wounds were too severe, and he had fallen unconscious outside this Uinala's farmstead.
Are you sure you don't want to enter the path of cultivation?
Agros asked as he looked at the girl lying in the bed.
Only problems will come from that. Life is beautiful because it is short. Why would I want to prolong it just to fill it with bloodshed?
Uinala said with disapproval.
Look at that wound on your chest. Is it really worth it?
Agros only smiled in response as he finished dressing and walked out of the small house. He didn't have a specific place in mind, but rather simply chose to walk a while to loosen up. One day on the inside meant roughly 15 minutes on the outside. He might find himself in deep shit real soon and needed to be ready. The massive gash in his chest was still a bit troublesome, but he would be able to fight at full power without issue. Hopefully it wouldn't come to that. Zack should have reached a floor high enough to scare off any attempt on their lives, and if not, he would serve as an excellent lightning rod for their attacks until they tired themselves out. The demon found himself on top of a small hill soon enough, and Agros took a deep breath as he looked around at the quiet vale where he had stayed the past days. The world of cultivators and immortals was almost completely cut off from this little community. The strongest person he had encountered was an old hunter who was level 29. People worked their fields and lived off the land, without strife or any real suffering. Their lives were short but fulfilling. Uinala would probably marry someone from the community, and their 3 weeks together would turn into a hazy memory of an adolescent escapade.
Is it worth it? Agros mumbled as he looked up at the sky. Definitely.
He donned a mask and robe and crushed his token the next moment, not sparing the house and his savior another look. A brief bout of darkness shrouded his surroundings until the world exploded into colors. The beautiful lake was hidden deep within the mountains, untouched for thousands of years. Not a ripple could be seen on its surface, making it seem like a perfect mirror that reflected the heavens above. If one looked from a certain angle, it would be impossible to discern which sky was real and which one was fake. A scream suddenly broke the tranquility of the secluded mountain as a harried cultivator desperately fled for his life. A group of warriors was hot on his heels, and the man's back was covered in wounds. He looked back and forth, but there was nowhere to hide. He knew he would have to make a final stand if he wanted to break free. An hour later, the same man slowly breached the crest of the mountain housing the tranquil pond, and his eyes lit up when he saw the inviting waters. He had barely survived the ordeal, and he was grievously wounded and without provisions. but at least he could drink his fill. The man dipped his hands in the pond, causing a ripple to spread across the tranquil surface. If the man hadn't been completely focused on quenching his thirst, he would have noticed a shocking change in his surroundings. Just as the pond rippled from his actions, so did the sky above. Heavens and lake mirrored each other, and it was impossible to tell which was which. But his mind was occupied with thoughts of escape, and he lamented the fact that he couldn't simply sprout wings and fly away, leaving his problems behind. He was so engrossed in his escapism, he didn't even notice how the air behind him shuddered as two crystalline wings appeared on his back. He only kept drinking the icy cold water, feeling it was the most delectable thing ever. He finally managed to quench his thirst, and the moment his hand left the pond, the ripples disappeared, once again turning into a mirror. The man looked down at his reflection again, feeling that he wasn't as harried any longer. There was something odd about him, though, but he couldn't put his finger on it. Did he get the feeling because of the wound across his chest? No matter. The important thing was that he would be able to keep moving for a bit longer. He jumped off from the ground, his wings vigorously pushing through the air to lift him into the sky. The warrior soon soared among the clouds and set off toward the sunset. Each beat of his wings filled his tired soul with a sense of freedom as trees and hilltops flashed by beneath. But his sense of euphoria slowly dimmed and was replaced with a creeping unease. Something was wrong. He had sensed it before, and the feeling only became more and more palpable as time passed. It was like he was dreamwalking, where the world wasn't true and correct as he had always known it. The wings! Since when did he have wings? What were these crystalline monstrosities attached to his back? Was this some curse the guards of his family had placed on him before being struck down? But he had never heard of anything like it. Incongruous emotions clashed in his mind, memories of a life in the heavens, and memories of a life on the ground. But the memories of soaring among the clouds soon shattered, turning into crystalline shards that floated away. He was elated at grasping the truth, but his eyes widened in horror when the wings on his back disintegrated, turning into shards just like the false memories.